You're listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter, and we think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find this episode encouraging.
Joe said, we are in the last week of our series on body, mind, soul, an integrated approach to mental health and faith. As always, you are welcome to get up, walk around, grab a tea, wander out. It's lovely and sunny out there. Make this space your own as you need. You're certainly not trapped in your couches and your chairs. But we are at the end of this four-week series. I feel like I've been swimming in it because, you know, that's my role in some way. But I hope that it has been refreshing for you, meaningful for you. I hope it's been, I hope it's been deep in some way and healing as we've gone through. Tonight we're kind of wrapping it up and we're landing the plane to think about, well, what does it look like in the context of community to do faith and mental health well? That's where we're tracking. As always, we are integrating wisdom from the Bible, that incredibly inspired, wonderful text, and we're integrating it with wisdom from social work land and psychology and science to come up with something that is grounded and practical. And I hope that it's helpful for you. Should we do a refresh of where we've been, particularly for those who haven't been here? Let's recap. Let's do it. Week one, we looked at this idea of, in the Bible, there's this grand narrative of Jesus' salvation. And Jesus comes and pours out the Holy Spirit after, you know, all this mess. And in that moment, the Holy Spirit arrives. And the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. It's all this joy. We all sang a song together. I got that joy, 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 joy. I thought by week four you'd be more into it, but it's gone the opposite direction. We recognize that there's this story of joy throughout the Bible that is wonderful, and we all get to be a part of it. But at the same time, in the Bible, there are these narratives of pain. And the Bible doesn't give us one picture of the state of humanity. The Bible gives us a woven picture of the state of humanity. There is hardship, there is sacrifice, there is suffering. And those things exist, and they've been recorded in the Bible. God doesn't ignore them. God places them front and center. So we looked at Psalms, we looked at Job, we looked at my God, why have you forsaken me? And we recognized that those voices of pain are sacred. They are sacred voices in the Bible. And maybe because they're sacred in the Bible, it also gives us an opportunity to find a sacredness in that for ourselves, to voice that hurt, to bring that before God, to say, God, this is really dark now. And so we looked at that testimony that is throughout the Bible, but then also there's this, what Walter Brueggemann calls the counter-testimony. There's the other narrative that's always present, always there. And until things come to their full conclusion, there will always be that present. Does that make sense? That's where we were week one. Week two, Kaz came along and we moved into this concept of integrating soul care and spiritual care, which kind of tied in with week one quite nicely. And this is a summary of that concept. We so often separate our body, our mind, and our soul into different categories, into these buckets that we look after. But at the end of the day, a biblical anthropology, a biblical picture of what it means to be human, is that all of these things are interconnected. You cannot have one without the other because we are integrated individuals. Yeah, so you can't come to church, get your spiritual fix, and then not eat. But, like, you'll die. That's what happens. But when you integrate those, you can have a bigger picture of what mental health looks like. That make sense? Yeah. And this week, We are landing it into, well, what does it look like in our community? What does it look like amongst us to practice a community perspective of mental health? One of the things that we've done throughout the last few weeks is heard people's stories. Week one, we heard from Kiralee. Last week, we got to hear from Claire. And this week, we're hearing from an anonymous person. This person has put together a video. It was put together, not just for this series, but put together a video exploring this question of what does a major depressive episode look like for me? What does it look like? And they offered to show this, and I watched it, and I said, yep, that will be a really helpful thing, I think, as we close our series together, because it doesn't use words, it's music and video, to say, well, what does this look like for this individual? And I found it really striking. So I'm going to stop talking and throw it to the screen, but enjoy this as, take it in as a picture of what it feels like for this person to experience depression. Striking, isn't it? All those images of people running about their busy lives in the city of Sydney, and then this experience of feeling, I wonder what words you put to that, hidden, covered, alone, isolated, disjointed, separated from other people, in a situation where other people can see you, perhaps you're present, but you're so far removed from people's lives. And I wonder if, as you're watching that, it resonated with you, or maybe you've seen other people who you say, oh yeah, that is the experience that perhaps they've been through. Maybe it didn't resonate for you at all, and that is totally fine. But it's one person's perspective of what that's felt like for them. I think one of the reasons why I found it striking is I've never struggled with depression personally. It's not something that I've been through. In hindsight, I was very low and probably could have received a clinical depression diagnosis, but for me, it was very circumstantial. My world had just collapsed, lost a lot of friends when I came out. And so that I didn't have a long, long, long drawn-out period of suffering from depression. But for me, anxiety really took hold, and that's a family thing. And so this heart racing to the point where, you know, I'd struggle to step into spaces. And many of you would resonate with that side of things. And anxiety and depression are very connected, we know. So one of the reasons I wanted to show that video is because what we're doing here is we're recognizing that our community is not pristine. The people in this room aren't squeaky clean. I hate to break it to you. The people in this room have complex stories. And the fact that you are here today, and Joanna alluded to this earlier, the fact that you are here today could mean one of two things. either you are seeking a community to be a part of, or you're here because you think that other people in this room matter. And the two can be true at the same time. So I want to say thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for lending your bum in the chair, your conversations to us, that we can do this together. Because at the end of the day, I am more and more and more convinced as we go through life that community care is foundational to mental health. Community care is foundational to mental health. And if we look at that Venn diagram of the three body, mind, soul that we had earlier, I think we can be tempted to add a fourth one that is community care, but it's incorrect. This is, I think, how the model should actually look. That our body, mind, and soul are cared for in the context of community. Community becomes the wraparound feature that carries the whole thing from beginning to end. Yeah? Now, lest we get too lost in our own little minds here, let's take this back to some Bible. Because I challenge you to find any person of God throughout the Bible who did it on their own. Any takers? I sat for quite a while to think about it. And I could not... There are people who do it on their own for a moment. We looked at Elijah, who escaped into the wilderness. We look at Jesus, who escapes into the wilderness. But immediately, they are met with, in both those cases, angels. Because when the people of God aren't around, God's self steps in and sends support. And in those cases, they're met with food and comfort. In every case throughout the Bible, we see people connecting to do the task together. You have Moses, who has Aaron. You have Ruth, Naomi, Esther, and Mordecai. Elijah has his Elisha. Jesus has his 12, and in his 12 he has his 3, and in his 3 he has his 1. And then you hit the book of Acts. Let's have Acts on the screen. Many of you will be familiar with Acts chapter 2. This is just after this Pentecost moment where the Holy Spirit has arrived. Preaching is taking place. People are discovering just how good Jesus is. And this is what the early church looks like. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Sounds a bit cultish. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Socialism. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. That's an image of integrated practice, isn't it? People are in each other's houses. People are sharing life together. People are supporting one another. And we're not talking about the easiest of days here. We're talking about the early church, which struggled, which had an uphill battle on every front. And so they would meet together. And I picture that and I think, okay, here's not the silver bullet to mental ill health, but here's the foundation on which we build good community. Yeah? And good community, we know, is one of the most protective factors when it comes to mental ill health. That is the grounding that we base ourselves in. And we see that, if we can, go right back to Genesis chapter 2 with the creation of the first person, the earth creature. And God says, it is not good for this earth creature, this Adam, to be alone. And yet, we know, because we live in Sydney, that Sydney is extremely disconnected. We know that loneliness is rife. We know that in our own worlds, it is easy to go days and weeks and months without connecting deeply with people who we care about. Because what? Business? The hustle? Rent prices? Trying to just get by? They're all there. Hey. Do we see what we're saying here? Is it making sense? It's not rocket science, but it's so foundational. And I just want to draw our community's attention to this as we land our series in mental health. So if we go to the next slide, Chris, how do we make this really practical? Here's what I want to suggest, and it might be helpful, it might be not, take it or leave it. I think when it comes to mental health in the church, we've covered clinical presentations, we've covered good psychological assistance from professionals, medication, we've covered all that. But what can we do in this space here, starting today? I want to suggest the Bible calls us to meals and stories. That I think is a beautiful framework for thinking about community and mental health. Meals and stories. Meals because Jesus just did it. Jesus had meal after meal after meal to the point where they called him a glutton and a drunkard, and he just kept doing it. He would meet with people in their homes, in the marketplace. He would sit and share life, and he would ask them about their journeys. Food across the world is how people connect. There is a reason why part of our DNA since day dot of New City Church has been we all go to the pub together afterwards. But because sure, we can have spiritual care in this space, but we also need spiritual care over food together. And that is precious time. So if you're able to make it to the pub, let me commend that to you, because it's a time of togetherness. If you're able to join Elkie on the, what date was it? 31st of August. 31st of August. QR code. Chat to Elkie. If you're able to join along for a meal, if you're newish, and you want to come over for a newcomer's dinner at Thomas Down House, we'd love to have you. We have a little dog who's violent. He's adorable, but yeah, we'll keep you safe. Because having people in houses, in cafes together, I can't emphasize it enough. It has to be the foundation of New City Church. It is so incredibly vital that we gather together to support one another. And meals, perhaps taken as a metaphor, you don't actually have to have food, you can just have coffee if you want. But to be there with each other, hearing one another's journeys, is extraordinarily valuable. Next week at retreat, I'm so looking forward to it. It's going to be delightful. The Friday night, you'll get an email about this all in a little while. The Friday night, you get to go up and spend some time in smaller groups, in Airbnbs around Katoomba. There'll be nice cheese boards, etc. I think, we'll see. And then on a Saturday, we have three meals together. We have sessions, but we have meals together where we eat. And, you know, we could send each other off into cafes and go different ways and then come back together again, but that's not what we want to do. We want to sit at the same table with eclectic cutlery and share good food, because that's when we ground each other in each other's lives. And that's when we get to hear each other's stories. That's the second one. Meals and stories. Jesus was a remarkable storyteller. He took the most mundane parts of existence, like seeds and lost coins, and he turned them into profound moments. And humans, since time immemorial, have been storytellers. That's how we frame our existence in the world. And I would suggest you have the honor in a community like this of two things. You get to tell your story, and you get to hear other people's stories. And that is a deep, deep privilege. We don't want to take that for granted. So let's do something really practical. Don't worry, you don't have to do anything. Let's do something extraordinarily practical, because I know that a lot of people think, okay, well, how do I hear people's stories? How do I actually, you know, ask questions? I start a conversation and it terrifies me. How do I go a little bit deeper? Well, this is what I teach. This is what I spend my week teaching. How to ask questions, how to have a conversation as a social worker. So let me give you our crash course in Counseling 101. You ready? Yeah, good. Because even if you aren't, you're going to get it. This is Counseling 101. If you are to walk out of this space now, you are not a qualified counselor. But it is something. In fact, some of you might have seen me practice these before. The first one is, it's called SOLA. Elke, you would know all about these. SOLA. S-O-L-E-R. SOLA. I don't know if it spells anything, but it stands for something. So, okay, you ready? S stands for sitting square, or at a slight angle. It's just to be nice and broad. So, Thomas, I'm going to need you. Come on up. Give me another chair. Okay. This was not rehearsed, by the way. Okay, so we're going to sit. Look, if I'm sitting here like this, quite intimate, but inappropriate. Yeah. So I'm going to sit away a little bit, and we sit comfortably, slight angle. So are you comfortable? Wonderful. Okay. Next one is O, Sala, S-O, open. Now I'm not going to sit, my legs crossed and my arms folded, yeah? How am I going to sit? O is for open. So we just open our posture. I'm going to lean forward slightly. That's L, leaning. E stands for eye contact. Now, that's controversial because I'm not going to stare at him. No, I'm not going to stare at him. Lovely as he looks. I'm going to gently match his eye contact. So, I'll chat to it. And R stands for relax. So, I'm not uptight, I'm just relaxed. So, I'm sitting square, I'm open, I'm leaning in, I'm maintaining eye contact, and I'm relaxed. That's solar. And then, this is skill number two, it's called reframing. Oh no, let's go with paraphrasing. Let's go paraphrasing. Okay, you're going to say something to me. You're going to say, I've had a really hard day today because I'm just feeling down. Okay, that's the word you're going to say. Say it and see how I respond.
I've had a really hard day today because I'm just feeling down.
Oh, it sounds like you're feeling like low. Is that the word? Whoa, okay, did you see what I did? I took what he said, and I just reframed it a little bit, just to explore. Just to say, okay, tell me more. And that opens the other person up. Okay, so that's reframing. Let's do the last one, it's called echoing. This is the core skill that you need to know, and it's my easiest one. Say, I've had a bad day today, I'm feeling flat.
Flat.
That's it! That's it! That's all you have to do! Take the last word of their sentence and say it! It's remarkable! Take a seat, give a round of applause to Thomas. That was wonderful, wasn't it? Listening doesn't have to be wildly complicated. There's another skill that we teach students all the time, which is just a matter of curiosity. And that is taking the last sentence that they give and just asking that as a question. I've been feeling flat today. You've been feeling flat today. Now that I've told you what I do, you'll hear it constantly. Because my friends, that's pastoring. That's all I'm not very intelligent when it comes to my questions. I sit and I love listening and asking questions. And in that, I think one of the reasons why it's so exciting for me to be a part of your lives is because I get to hear your stories. I just get to ask, like, how's that going for you? What are you tracking with at the moment? What's causing frustration or keeping you down? Or what's bringing you joy? What's lifting you up? And so in community, that's where we get to share stories. And so can I encourage you, as you go through your time at New City Church, retreat on Sundays, as you meet together in people's houses, be open to hearing stories. Because the greatest thing about stories is you don't need a response. You don't need to judge. You don't need to sit over. You just get to listen. You certainly don't need to provide advice. You just get to be present. And we know, let me just keep coming back to it. We know that people in Sydney are isolated. People in Sydney are lonely. We know that loneliness is one of the biggest predictors of mental ill health. We've said it before. Faith communities have two things that most people in the world don't have that are protective factors when it comes to mental health. Faith and community. And so that's what we create, yeah? So, we hear stories. Let me give two very quick practical things that I want to throw into your mind, to toss around, to see what comes up. A few weeks ago, solo pastor at New City Church for the foreseeable future. I was chatting with someone just this week who reminded me that I'm not a superhuman. And it's true. I certainly am not. And I will get burnt out very quickly if I have to pastor everyone and listen to everyone's stories. That's just not feasible. So I would love if we could coordinate some sort of pastoral care group who were trained up a little bit, who had some skills, who were quite passionate about it, who could volunteer to meet with people and hear stories and share the pastoral load. How nice would that be? I want to throw that out there as something. If that tickles your fancy, let's make it happen. It doesn't have to happen, but it could be really cool. But if that's something that floats your boat, come chat to me. Let's make that happen. The second one is community groups. We have two at the moment that are really beautiful. I would love to see a third and a fourth. By community group, what I mean is people meeting in people's houses across Sydney through the week. One happens at our house on Wednesday night, and it's really beautiful. We've been going for years with the same group of people, with bits and ins and outs, and it's just been really refreshing to know each Wednesday we can gather with that group of people and offload and be present and hear stories. So that's my two that I want to throw in the mix. We've all become expert counsellors. Next step is, how do we actually build that into our practice as a community? Is that sitting okay? We're good? Well, it's time to land this series a little bit. Because when we think about, and we go to the last slide, Chris, when we think about this context, not that slide yet. That's coming later. So go to the Venn diagram with a circle of community. Yeah, this one. When we think about what it looks like to be in community, one of the things that we constantly see is people are experiencing levels of disconnection. There is disconnection from self, disconnection from land, disconnection from God, disconnection from one another. And so one of the things that we strive for at New City Church is to enhance that connection in whatever ways we possibly can. And this is a form of that connection. What does it mean to connect to self, to connect to mind, soul, and community? And one of the rich histories of the Christian Church is doing communion together as a way of connecting to God, as a way of reiterating that we are connected in community. And so we're going to do that. We're going to do communion together. If you're comfortable, I'm going to invite everyone in a moment, as you want, to come up and take part in this meal. Now, I want to recognize that for some of you, this might be the first time that you've considered communion. Welcome. I hope that it's a nice event for you. For some of you, you've done this for many years, and a previous place of worship has said that you're not allowed to take part in communion because of who you are. That is deeply antithetical to the Christ of the Bible. Jesus declares that all are welcome at Jesus' table, and Jesus is the one who gets to make that decision, not the Archbishop. So if you have felt like this is not a table where you have belonged, either because of who you are or something that you believe, may I encourage you to challenge that thought for yourself, to actually say that this is your table as much as anybody else. When Jesus was about to die, he was sitting with his friends, the disciples, in an upper room. He took some bread that was in front of him, and he broke the bread, and he said, "This is my body broken for you." In the same way, he took the cup and he passed it around, and he said, "This is my blood poured out for many." And for thousands of years, the Christian Church has been taking part in this meal ever since, as we remind ourselves that Jesus' body was broken, Jesus' blood was shed, that we might stand before God and be declared children of the Most High God. And this is a radical invitation to take part in that story.